What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
There. I was like, oh, there you are. And then I got right into the high. And
good morning, Jenna
it's
Wolf.
It's Friday.
Good to see you,
great
Chris Carter.
Week.
Fun
first
week.
Things first, Jenna I'm Jenna Wolf.
Good to see you.
This is Nick Wright. That's the Hall of Famer.
That's
Chris
why y'all
Carter.
Need to script the opening.
Mm-hmm. No,
because
no, no,
both
no.
Of your
people
weird.
Want to see the weirdness. They
Jenna's
embrace
like, oh,
the
surprise.
Weirdness.
Hey, what are you
I
doing
didn't even
here?
Know you.
The camera.
We were just
I
hanging out
show.
Here all morning, and then a camera showed up. This is where
that's
we sit in hair and makeup and do all of our research.
Absolutely.
We have a big show on this Friday morning. Kevin Durant has more mind-blowing comments. Ezekiel Elliott has some new goals for himself. And OBJ is accounted for. So why don't we start with Odell Beckham Jr. He showed up for work yesterday. So did my friend Chris Carter, but we didn't make a big deal about that. You make a deal about it when you are Odell and you're entering the final year of your rookie deal. And you've let it be known you want a new contract. He did get some good news yesterday. Giants owner John Mara said Beckham's contract will come sooner rather than later. That's always good news. Say, would it be a good idea for the Giants at this point to extend Odell before the season starts?
Well, it's not paramount to what they're doing to extend them before. The thing about it's nice, and you heard from the ownership and the Giants yesterday that they would begin to talk about a contract. The Giants they're a great organization. And that's one of the things that I've always stood by as far as them, what they're going to do with their coach, what they decide to do with players. This organization that has done things the right way for a long period of time. So I thought they would do the right thing by OBJ, but I know they were conflicted based on the things that they had seen and the things that they had already addressed with him that he hadn't really gained control of. So I think that they're at the right point. He's in the last year of his contract. He is a superstar in the NFL. The Giants do need him, but they need him at a certain price. Now, I think that Odell, based on his injury from last season and some of the things off the field, he's probably come off of the
quarterback money.
Yes. Like, he was delusional when he said, hey, I want to get quarterback money. I want to be the highest paid. Like, that's not necessary. Like, as long as they make him the highest paid wide receiver, which he should because it's his turn, and that's the way the market typically, if you're one of the top five guys, typically you can get into that slot, and that's where he should be. I don't think the Giants are delinquent. I think that the timing is right because what if in the last 3 months they had given him $80 million? Like, what sense would that have made for them? Because they don't have any guarantees that what Odell's going to do in the future. So I think that he's kind of earning back their trust. You can kind of see a push-pull between
the
two.
By showing up for training camp, staying out of the limelight.
And I think that they've talked about that. Show up, and then we'll start having talks. It's not as if an owner is not going to tell the media first before they tell the player.
Okay.
So you know they've communicated this to him. Do the right things. Show up, be a good leader, and we'll do what we're supposed to do.
And it is time for Odell to get an extension, just like it's time for Khalil Mack to get an extension. Same draft. Just like it's time for Aaron Donald to get an extension. Same draft. Just like it was time for Zach Martin to get an extension. He got his earlier than these other guys earlier this offseason. Same draft. Those are four guys from what has turned out to be a really quality top half of the first round of the 2014 NFL draft. Mack was a defensive player of the year. Donald was a defensive player of the year. Odell Beckham, I've talked ad nauseum about through at this point in his career, 47 games. There's never been a more productive receiver. Zach Martin's probably the best guard in football. When the players, and we can talk about they signed a bad CBA, they should have gone more for about the, they shouldn't have done the rookie salary scale the way they did. But one of the things that the union, therefore the players, were told was the reason we are doing the new rookie salary structure is so money can be in reserve for our proven veterans. As odd as it sounds, Odell Beckham is now a proven veteran. Once you're into year five, you're a veteran in this league. He's as proven as any wide receiver in football, short of Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. And skill-wise, he's right there with them. So, yes, the only reason he wouldn't is if you think the off-the-field stuff has gotten to a level where it's untenable to keep him long-term. And while I understand Odell is certainly in the news more than Julio, and Odell is in the news as much as, but probably for worse reasons than Antonio Brown, on the scale of NFL players in the news, when it comes to Odell, it's mostly petty stuff. This isn't a guy who's been suspended by the league for conduct, steroids, drugs, anything aside from an in-game incident with Josh Norman. And so he is of our superstars.
I would say we don't know that for certain.
We know he hasn't been suspended. That's all I said. I just said that he hasn't been suspended by the league, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, that doesn't mean that if there's, because there are players in the league that are not, I'm not talking about steroid policy, but the recreational drug policy that are in the program that we don't know about. So I can't say definitively anyone's not in a program or is, but we know he hasn't missed NFL games due to a suspension. We know he hasn't been arrested since he's come into the league. We know these things. So on the scale of NFL player behavior, he's not a bad actor compared to his peers. As a whole, he might be a bad actor compared to some of the marquee faces of the league, but his play on the field, to me, supersedes that. I think the Giants feel the same way.
I don't think the Giants feel that way, and I don't think the Giants have more intel on Odell. I believe there's more information out there than you or the public might know, and that's the reason why they're slow on these guarantees, because the Dallas Cowboys, when they extended Zach Martin, and it's nice that you made the comparison because they're all in the same class, he's got zero character issues. They gave him the money. Man, we'll make you the highest paid. It's no problem. There's really no negotiating. Khalil Mack, he's up for a contract. Off the field, zero blemishes. Aaron Donald, last year's defensive MVP, zero blemishes. And all of them, based on their locker room and what their locker room says, they're great teammates. What I worry about, Odell, is what are the Giants buying? Because I know the kid who came in from LSU, you know, top part of the first round. LSU produced a lot of professional receivers. So it's not as if we thought Odell Beckham was going to be Julio Jones. We didn't know how good he's going to be. Thought he could be really special. But for the Giants, I mean, what are they buying? What are they? Are they getting the guy? Because he didn't have yellow hair when they drafted him. Now, since then, I mean, you look at the things that we've seen him do, and to me, all of it springing from the great catch that he makes against the Cowboys, but that to me hadn't helped him. Because he has changed and metamorphed himself with his tattoos and everything. And there's nothing wrong with those things. Ultimately, you got to be comfortable with yourself. And that's what I see Odell. I see the struggle where he's not comfortable. He's always changing and evolving. And that's why he's always on the move. Now, you can be a great football player and do that. But I don't think you can be the greatest wide receiver and do those types of things.
And there's one other thing, and it's something you brought up a little earlier. Can he do all those things and still be a good leader? Because who do the Giants have right now in that locker room that could come in, besides Eli Manning, who is a quiet leader, and say, you know, I'm commanding this money. I'm so good at what I do. I'm going to help lead this locker room.
Yeah, they are short of leaders. Now, they might have inside the locker room leaders that we don't know about, but when you're a bad football team, you start making excuses. We saw the bickering and everything that went on. Didn't seem like leadership because that was with veteran players. Now, that's the worst kind of locker room. It's something we expect younger players not to know. But when you got veteran players that have the locker room in chaos, don't know if they're going to play, players being suspended, walking off the field. So it's important that if you pay a guy $16 to $20 million, he should be a leader. There should be leadership qualities baked into that type of
mindset. Is there that expectation, Nick, with Odell that he can be?
I think we've had Snacks Harrison here talk about Odell. He feels comfortable letting Odell babysit his kid. He said we have heard teammates say that he is a good guy in the locker room, even some of the same teammates that don't necessarily like his sideline antics if they can be a distraction. So I don't, right now, would I say is Odell Beckham a leader? only by example as far as performance and work ethic, but probably when, as you mentioned, once he gets that contract, there are other expectations that come with it. You're supposed to be at every offseason workout. You're supposed to, there are things that come with it. But you said something that I find really interesting, which is, are those on the path to being the greatest? Not to being great, but being the greatest. And that is you using what Odell has spoken to you as his goals, not against him, but using it as,
yes.
Listen, are you on that path? And this is where I think we have to just take at least a slight step back when we're talking about this contract. A guy can be worthy of being the highest paid wide receiver in football for a few months or until the next guy comes up, being near at the top of the market, worth $16 million a year, even if he might be falling short of that ultimate goal. You don't have to.
No, to me, it's not a matter of being worth the money.
Right.
All right?
It's exactly not
exactly
right.
I mean, Brandon Cooks is getting, I mean, so it's not a matter of being worth the
exactly
money.
Exactly right.
At some point, though, it's about beyond the money. He's got an image, all right? The one thing all players have in common, and this is the only thing that we have in common, there is no one the same size, height, weight, speed, what you do under pressure, can you play in the slot, can you play outside? What we have is time. And those things I showed Odell Beckham, when you're trying to be the greatest ever, those things don't assist you in trying to be there because you're wasting time.
And that's why I wanted to seize on that, because there some people think that Chris has, because people know your relationship with Odell, and I think some people think like something has happened between you and Odell. That is not the case. I'm going to speak for you here, and if you think I'm wrong, then yell at me. Chris is holding Odell to a standard that Odell has said he wants to hold himself to. The standard of, I want to be the greatest.
And he has the talent.
And that's the other part. Chris knows.
I've had wide receivers tell me they want to be the greatest. And, so there's no chance.
Right. Or you say in your head, okay, that's, you know, good for you. Keep working at it. But at no point did you think it was possible. When Odell said that to you, I know you thought, you know what? It's on the board. There is a universe that exists where that could happen. And the standard you hold him to on TV and off TV is one of, are you making choices that lead you there? That is a high standard.
There's only two other receivers I've ever had the conversation with. One was Randy Moss, and that was the first day we drafted him. And I tell him the same thing I told Odell. And Randy, man, he wasted some time. But look how good he was. But he wasted
time in Oakland.
And Larry Fitzgerald. And he wastes no time. So for me, when you enunciate that to me, there is a certain standard out there, and I have seen Randy Moss, man, he achieved that. He's getting his gold jacket next week. Larry Fitzgerald, man, they're forming his bust right now. They're doing the dread part of it. All right, Odell, he is one of those guys.
He didn't have the offseason you're talking about, Odell. This
yes.
time. He didn't. It
no.
was not a quiet, let me spend all my time in the gym just focused on getting myself back and up and ready. All right, we're going to talk a lot more about this. Eric Mangini is going to join us a little bit later. Coming up on the other side, a disgruntled Kevin Durant responds to his critics. Hear from him next on First Things First. Kevin Durant just can't seem to stay away from the spotlight. After making headlines for a podcast exchange he had with CJ McCollum, one that extended onto Twitter, one that involved responding to total strangers in a defensive manner, KD spoke out about how exasperating the media has been. Take a listen.
It's just to the point where I know what you're upset at. Just say it instead of just trying to, you know, make excuses. You know what I'm saying? I got too many texts, or I talk too much on Instagram, or I talk too much on Twitter, and I don't know how to talk to my teammates, so I'm angry, I'm insecure, or sensitive. Tell me what the real problem is, because every time I say something, I go about my business, and when I say something, who's House of Highlights and Bleacher Report gas y'all up and y'all run with it, and as soon as I say something back, I'm the sensitive one. I mean, I know y'all trying to make me look crazy and discredit me and strip me of my credibility, but I see what you're doing, but I'm gonna still keep standing.
Make it up. We can't make up the sole of his shoe or the cupcakes or the Twitter. We don't just make that stuff up. It happens. We talk about it. What was your reaction, Nick?
Listen, okay, let me just back up for a second.
This reminds me of going to a really good restaurant. I mean, the reputation is great. The food was amazing. But the guy at the front who you met, like, he was a jerk. So it's not like the restaurant's bad. It just happened to be one person. I mean, Kevin Durant, like, stop.
Yeah.
Okay, you're the one told us that
yes.
you had all the counts and everything. You told us this. So
right.
It's not. No, we're not trying to make you be crazy. Your basketball game is amazing, but you immature. And the social media is getting the best of you. So let me tell you, your Zagat rating on your game, basketball, real, real high. 8. Social media and how being a superstar, bro, you stink.
Well, and it is, by the way, to carry your analogy forward, that same restaurant used to have the most impeccable hostess ever imagined.
What happened to him?
I don't, because it's the same person. I don't know what happened to him.
The guy used to just walk up there, reach in, give him what he wants right. With a handshake.
Exactly right.
And that would get you in.
Right. Okay. Listen, KD, it is not, I know how, it's not really a conspiracy if they're actually out to get you. I know. But it ain't a conspiracy, man. You had the same media that you're saying is out to get you, make you look crazy, make you look insecure. You had them eating out of the palm of your hand. It was, you the real MVP, Russ, you gonna get one of these, signing my extension via Twitter, why is everyone teaming up together, okay, you know, Kevin Durant Steakhouse in OKC. And you made a choice that absolutely was your right, that did make some members of the media question your basketball integrity. But that was as far as it went. Everything since then is why you are now in this storm that Steph is not. That LeBron, despite being in the spotlight for 18 years, has never found himself in. That Anthony Davis was the most controversial thing he ever did. Trick us into thinking he shaved his unibrow. There are a handful of superstars in this league. We will dissect and analyze decisions, public moves. James Harden dealt with this. James Harden found out, I'm a little too famous to go to the strip club every night. I'm going to get criticized for that. Like, period, point blank. Maybe when I was the sixth man, I could do that.
Right.
Now that I'm MVP candidate, people are going to talk about that. Russ found out, okay, people are really going to talk about, do people hate me as a teammate? Am I a good or a bad guy?
Who found out yesterday? Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right, sure. There you go. So, Kevin Durant, it's not like we, the cabal that is the media, spun a wheel and said, oh, KD's turn. It is repeated decision after decision, all, by the way, involving some form of social media that has made us realize he is different than every other superstar we have in major American sports. If Aaron Rodgers was out there copping to having burner accounts, arguing with people via DM, and repeatedly talking about, I'm done with social media on your Sage Bill Simmons podcast, and then engaging in it, doing all these things, he'd get it too. Like, maybe it's unfair, but it's not. You're not getting picked on.
Imagine Tom Brady last year before the season where, Nick, I think it's on record, that the Patriots in this modern era were the largest favorite that we had ever seen as far as the NFL before the season, to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we know the story that they didn't win, but just imagine Tom Brady telling another NFL quarterback, Blake Bortles, you're going to win the Super Bowl?
Forget Blake Bortles, unfair. Phillip Rivers. You know what I mean? Because Bortles was down at the bottom. CJ's a near all-star. Say it to Phillip Rivers. Say it to a guy who's good but not as good as you.
Yeah, those types of things. And you're right. And I never thought about it. As far as our superstars, Kevin Durant has put himself in a special position.
Why do you think this is still such a sore spot? Because all of this stems from the one trigger he has, and that's this decision to go to Golden State. Why do we keep coming back to this? Is it just about the fact that he is just ridiculously insecure, and the same media that glorified him in Oklahoma City are the same ones seemingly are questioning this move?
This is one thing. The lifestyle that a superstar has to live in this day, it's different. And it is difficult. And you have to work at it every single day. A lot like to get a jump shot like he has, you have to work on that on a repetition basis. Now, he might not be doing it every day, but you don't shoot the basketball unless you have put hours upon hours upon hours dealing with the social media and dealing with being a superstar and being rich. Man, it takes hours and hours of repetitions of doing and saying and sometimes not saying what you want to say. That part, Kevin Durant, he hasn't perfected that. His jump shot in his game, he has perfected.
This is the thing. KD is almost never criticized for basketball, because he shouldn't be. He's a great, an all-time great player. He seems to be a really good teammate for the team he's currently on. Now, whether he'll talk bad about you once he leaves, whatever, but we've seen other guys do that. He does, and we don't talk enough about any of the guys that do this stuff, but he does amazing things charitably. I'm talking tens of millions of dollars in his community.
Mm-hmm.
He, for some reason, though, does not understand that part of the trade-off of being this level of famous, this level of wealthy in major American sports, is we are going to dissect behavior that diverges from what we perceive as the norm. And his use of social media is so far abound from every other superstar we have that, of course, we're going to talk about it. And so you use the word insecure. I don't think he's insecure about many things. I think he's uncertain about the decision he made. But the word I will use, or the phrase, is a lack of self-awareness. He, for some reason, seems to be in denial about how famous he is and what goes along with it. Being rich and famous seems, at that level, seems to be a pretty dope existence. There are a few drawbacks. You can't date an adult film star without it being written about. Jimmy Garoppolo found out. Sorry, I wasn't saying you did that.
You can't date an adult film star.
My apologies. For example, Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, you can't just be exchanging barbs on Twitter
the way
Dusty can. And so,
you're scrutinized to the umpteenth degree.
That's part of the deal, fair or not. And every other major American superstar gets it.
Is, exactly.
Everyone else gets it.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, Gronk speaking out on rumors of his holdout. That's next on First Things First. Stories to start your morning now. Pete Carroll had some harsh words for Earl Thomas. He said, quote, he should be here and he's not here. See, how do you think this situation ends?
They're not going to sign him to a contract extension. They've moved on from the great memories of the past, and I believe they're going to have to trade him. They need to find some place where they can trade him before the season and get some value out of still a very, very good player who does not want to be there just for one season.
You said trade him before the season. I think they will have to trade him. I'm not certain it'll be before the season. If you remember last year, the Seahawks added a player midseason who extended his holdout through 7 weeks of the year in Dwayne Brown. Like, they might really call his bluff and see if he's willing to not only miss training camps, but miss game checks before they end up pulling the trigger. But I don't think he's going to show up anywhere without a contract extension.
All right, big milestone for Carson Wentz. Eagles couldn't be happier. He participated in full team non-contact drills yesterday. Chris, you expect Carson Wentz to be good to go week one now?
I'm looking forward to it. That's big for him not to start on the pup and to be able to be there with the first team. He's got still a little bit of limited. He's not going to do the full team duties. He'll do 7-7 individual work. But it's great, too, for his teammates to see him out there. To get to this point, it's monumental from an injury standpoint. Now it's a matter of confidence, getting confidence in that league leg. And then now we want to see some bodies around him live those preseason games. That becomes very important.
But to answer your question, yes. I mean, that week, they obviously will be playing the first game of the year. I believe it's against Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so they have the shortest offseason by just a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, if he's able to do this at the end of July, what's he going to be able to do at the beginning of September? Mm-hmm. My guess is start an NFL football game.
All right, moving on. Jarvis Landry has some high hopes for the Browns this year. Well, I mean, if you consider scoring 40 points a game and winning the Super Bowl, high hopes. Landry says the Browns have the potential to do just that. 40 points a game.
40 points a game, see?
Winning the Super Bowl. Nick, can the Browns do such a thing?
You were on a team that set the NFL record at the time for points scored in a season, 98 Vikings. Y'all didn't even sniff 40 a game. So Jarvis Landry says, eat that, 98 Vikings. How about you, 07 Pats? 40 a game. Gonna break all the records. I'm excited to watch.
Worst to first.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what's not going to happen during the season. We're not going to be getting good sound bites from him. All right? Let's try to win a game. All right? My sports fans, let's slow down. Let's slow down a little bit. You haven't even played one game with the Browns. You haven't even been in the Browns organization.
He brought the winning legacy that he developed in Miami.
Oh, yeah. All those victories he had against New England. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah. Oh. Jarvis, be quiet.
You shoot for the stars. At least you land.
But it's not if you shoot yourself, though, in the head.
Finally, Rob Gronkowski considered a lot of things this offseason, among them, should I retire and should I not play anymore? One thing he was not considering, however, was holding out. He made a point to let everyone know that in camp yesterday. So you see, how important is Gronk to this Patriots offense?
Yeah, Gronk lets you know. Gronk is sometimes I don't do the smartest things, but I am pretty smart because holdouts don't work in New England. Now, he threatened them with the offseason. That's about as far as you can threaten them. Yeah. But you're not going to miss time in New England. I think that he's not telling the truth as far as him considering a holdout. He considered it, knew it wasn't going to work, or the Pats came to him and said, listen, we'll give you a little something, give you a little love, move some of the chips over here, move them to the front so you can benefit from it. But Gronk, it's not that important. He's a great player. He's injury prone. I need to see Gronk run on the field for the first game. Okay. That's the most important thing for Gronk. With Edelman being out with the suspension, they're talking about they're trying to trade Malcolm Mitchell. Who are you going to trade him to? Like, nobody.
A conditional seventh round pick.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's no value. They need Gronk healthy for the first game of the season. That's important. No, you're not going to hold out against the New England Patriots.
Even if he subscribed to the Nick Wright School of Negotiations, which tends to always be the advice for the player to take a hard line.
Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of graduates.
No, but it works with Dez Bryant. Oh, no.
It didn't work with Dez Bryant. It seems to have worked with Julio Jones. We're 1-1 at the moment. I would have said, let's not bluff New England. Let's not see if Bill Belichick will not only trade me, but do the opposite of what he did with Jimmy Garoppolo. If you remember Jimmy G, he had what seemed like a better offer from Cleveland, but he appreciated everything Jimmy G had done and wanted him to have the best situation possible. So he took a slightly inferior offer to San Francisco with the added benefit of Hoyer coming over. I feel like, man, Belichick's not afraid to not only trade you, but trade you to a place you don't exactly want to go. And so, Gronk, it's very hard to have leverage in New England if you're not Tom Brady. And so I think Gronk is playing this properly. And if I'm New England and he wants a little extra money, I don't mind doing it, but I tie it to not necessarily snaps, but games played. Like, hey, you get a bonus at your 14th game on the game day roster. Things like that to where if he's healthy for the full season, then he can get a bump in pay.
Quick question. Gronk is not a Belichick type of guy, but yet he's sort of been there. Him and Brady have kind of been there for a while now. You think Belichick really likes Gronk or has maybe a special place for him?
This is the thing. Gronk is a Belichick guy. You know the reason? He's great at what he does. And also, you get value from a roster standpoint. You got a guy that can play three positions. You can put him in the backfield. He can be the lead blocker. You can put him on the end of the line of scrimmage, and he can be one of the best end of the line of scrimmage blockers. Or you can put him outside. He can be an elite wide receiver. So, no, he's the perfect. He brings more value to the roster. They're not overpaying to have him. And if you can ask all Gronk's teammates, Gronk has never had a bad day. So you're talking about a guy you don't have to motivate, a guy who's going to show up and work hard every day? No. That's what Bill Belichick.
He doesn't miss assignments. He's a smart football player.
You couldn't play all those positions and not be a really smart football player.
So I think what Jenna, I think a lot of people think exactly what you said, which is he doesn't seem like a Belichick guy because of his I don't even know if it's his personality.
It's a big personality.
The persona that he has developed.
He's only got a big personality for you guys.
Right. Outside
there,
of the
he's
facility.
Not.
Right, that's the key, is like his branding and the crews and all that stuff.
Branding.
That's outside of the facility. I don't think Belichick cares much about that.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys now. Ezekiel Elliott is gearing up for a full season of play, unlike last year when he had to serve a 6-game suspension starting in week 10. Despite missing that time, he still rushed for nearly 1,000 yards, had 7 touchdowns. Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones is all in on Zeke.
In the short term, I think he wants to be one of the great ones to play the game. And I think he's a hardworking guy who knows what it takes. And, I think he's, it's a process. And I think he continues to mature. And as Jason said, he's taking a leadership role now. And, I expect him to really step up, I think, and have a great year this year.
All right, Steve, what do you think Ezekiel Elliott can improve on to do that, to be one of the great ones to play this game?
Well, now the way you judge running backs in this era is very, very different because you can't be one-dimensional and be a great back. We just don't see it. People say, well, you have Leonard Fournette. He had one season. We'll see where that goes as far as his career. But when you look at L. Bell, when you look at Todd Gurley, these guys are three down backs. They catch the ball out of the backfield substantially better than Zeke does. So that's what he's got to be able to work on. And that's his being a pass catcher. And that could be one of the hidden gems to their lack of a dominant wide receiver is how do we get Zeke involved in the passing attack? I believe that this will be his career high as far as targets, career high as far as yards, career high as far as catches, because that's something that they have not tapped into, and it's something the NFL does not have a book on Zeke. So he is a great runner of the football, and I expect a lot like his third season at Ohio State, where he dominated the Big Ten, championship and the college football playoffs,
dominated
ran through
Alabama,
Oregon, over 200 yards rushing in both of those games. I expect tremendous things. And the only reason why we weren't talking about this was because of the setback that he had last year. And the discussion was all these off the field allegations. Now, because no one can question his work ethic. No one can question his durability, and he loves to play football. So I agree with Stephen Jones. Stephen Jones and them, they know what they drafted. Like, and he is going to be a great football player, and this is just the beginning.
I'm glad you brought up his third year at Ohio State, because people, I think, just think about it in its totality. I was watching a clip just the other day. 3 minutes left, college football semifinal. Ohio State only up six. And what does Zeke do? 75 yards straight through the entire Alabama defense to beat Alabama, a team everyone thought was going to go on to win the championship. He's been a special guy throughout every phase of his football career.
Yes.
The one thing, like you mentioned, the pass catching. So I thought back to the moment when Alvin Kamara was here and you talking to Alvin Kamara off the air about the stem of his route and not bananaing the route is, I think, the terminology you used. In my mind's eye, when I think of big plays Zeke has made out of the backfield as a pass catcher, it's swing passes, it's screen passes. Mm-hmm. It's not the types of things where you're talking about with Kamara, where he's lining up in the slot, where he's lining up as a receiver and going out and doing that. How hard are those skills going to be for him to develop as far as just the route running component of it?
It's not that, because he's the type of athlete. He's a great athlete. He was a high hurdler and a sprinter in high school in track. He has good hand-eye coordination. He just is at Ohio State. They didn't throw him the ball an awful lot. He happened to go to Dallas Cowboys, where, man, they pushing people back. They just have not thrown him the ball yet. It's a skill that I believe he has. I don't believe he'll ever be the receiver that Todd Gurley is. I don't believe he'll ever be the receiver that L. Bell is, because they're really, really special. But also swing passes. Watch the screen game, because Dallas got three or four linemen that can really run in space. And screens are very, very good against zone coverage. They're going to get a lot of zone coverage because their lack of speed and lack of explosive wide receivers, you don't have to play them a lot of man-to-man.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Is he going to see a little more pass catching because of the lack of wide receivers that the Cowboys have right now?
Even if Dez Bryant was there, Jason Witten was there, this would still be the most impactful season as a pass catcher, because that's how you evolve. That's how you evolve as a player. And when you start, the NFL starts to understand what you like to do, and they try to force you to do things you want. This is something that he has not been able to do, not because he doesn't like to do it, just situational.
And as leagues change, players evolve. You say all the time when we do historical comparisons to 80s NBA players, and you say, man, if they needed to shoot the three, they would have learned to shoot the three. Like, it wasn't a part of the game, so you can't hold against him. A guy made 14 threes in a season. He wasn't asked to do it. As for a running back, to be the Todd Gurley, to be paid at the top of the market, if pass catching has to be a part of it, the guys with the skill sets for it. I saw Kareem Hunt in Kansas City last year. It's a mid-round draft pick. He had 500 yards receiving. Why? He had to develop that skill. It was something that the new NFL, you've got to be able to do all of it. And a guy like Leonard Fournette is, I think, going to become more of the outlier. A guy that's just considered going to run straight into the line. And so I think Zeke has the skill set to be able to develop.
Right, you're in too many three receiver sets, too many nickel defenses. So if you come into the league and that's your one thing you do, you're a banger, you're only going to be first and second down. So it's going to hurt you as far as where you draft. It's going to hurt as far as the role that you play on the team.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up next, should Carmelo Anthony's latest comments have the Rockets reconsidering signing him? Carmelo drama. Next on First Things First. Welcome back to First things first, you know who's here. Former NBA head coach, associate commissioner of the Big East, Stu Jackson.
Good to see you, Stu.
He's back.
Stu, it rolls off the tongue.
Truth teller.
Yeah.
Truth teller. Absolutely.
Phone call
I like
maker.
It.
Contact
I might
negotiator.
Have to negotiate with the Big East right here.
Right?
Nick Wright out, Stu in. Let's do this.
I didn't know he was replacing Nick.
No,
that's,
you
got
no.
Awesome.
Big East is where it's at.
Yeah, yeah, I got you. I got
no
you.
Doubt. Absolutely.
Let's talk some Carmelo Anthony, Stu. Carmelo was with the Thunder. He is currently a Hawk, and he's expected to get waived and join the Rockets over the weekend. He's got a lot of things, and he is a lot of things. What he isn't, apparently, is a role player. That, according to himself. He told Jemele Hill of Undefeated, I know how to play this game of basketball. I've been playing it for a long time. When I feel like I'm ready to take that role, then I'll take that role. Only I know when it's best for me to take that role. I am not going to do that in a situation where I still know my capabilities and still know what I can do. All right, Stu, we bring this up because the assumption is that he will need to change his role if he does sign with the Houston Rockets, at least in some capacity, maybe not in the beginning, maybe a little closer to the end. Should the Rockets reconsider signing him, given his desire to remain a starter?
Well, I think it's worth a conversation between the Rockets and Carmelo before they sign. The one thing that concerned me about the statement, I don't know how the two of you felt, is that he's not really the person that determines what his role is in terms of what's best for the team. That's up to the coach, and that is his role. And I was a little bit surprised, you know, before signing this deal that he didn't come out and say, hey, listen, I will do whatever it takes to vault the Houston Rockets to the championship level. Whatever role I'm asked to play, I will play. That would have been the more appropriate response. So that concerned me a little bit. And then technically, Carmelo, listen, I absolutely love this guy as a person. He is a terrific human being. He has been a great scorer in this league.
I hear a butt coming.
But.
There it is.
At this stage of his career, entering his 15th year, coming off a year where, you know, he had lows in assists, field goal percentage.
His worst points, year in every category.
Worst year ever. It might be best if he is a bench player. And not only that, his game is tailor-made for the bench.
So explain, I know what you mean, but explain what you mean by that.
Well, Carmelo is at his best, and I've seen him at his best, particularly on the national team and Olympic team. He's at his best when he is a catch-and-shoot player, where he is a player that catches 1-2 dribbles, pull up, whether you throw it in to the post, quick move, score. His plays are amazing. His ability to get offensive buckets, amazing. And that, I feel, is best served coming off the bench where he can be featured as a scorer, not within the context of a starting unit.
Listen, I think the starter bench thing actually is not the biggest issue here, because if the Rockets were to sign him, he probably, with the loss of Ariza, as you talked about yesterday, loss of Bamute, he actually probably, I think, would be a starter, at least in name. He'd be out there for the starting lineups. And I've been adamant that I think that Carmelo has good basketball left, and that I think what happened in Oklahoma City could be a learning experience, a humbling experience for him. These comments are troubling. Period, point blank. These are, Chris and I have been, before you started joining us on the show, while you've been joining us on the show, Chris and I have been going back and forth on this for a month now, couple months now, and I've been adamant that I think we can see not only a humbled Carmelo Anthony, but a Carmelo Anthony that understands where he is at this point in his career. These comments fly totally in the face of that. Said, I'm not a role player yet. I know how good I am. I know what I've got left in this league. And it so much so that if I were Daryl Morey in the Houston Rockets, if I was certain I was signing him, I'm now having let's call another meeting. Let's call another meeting. Let's see, is this Carmelo public bravado when, you know, when Jemele Hill finds him at a Nike event and he's, you know, just kind of, you know, that's to the media. Is this how he actually feels when he's just with us? And what does he think his role will be? Because if he thinks he's joining the Rockets as the third star, that was not the role he found himself in Oklahoma City. And the stars on the Rockets are as good, if not better, than the stars on Oklahoma City.
The essence of team sports, to me, will always be this. You can't just play the game because you love the game. You have to play the game because you love the essence of, I want to learn more about the game so I can play the game better. And you can go to the highest level as USA Basketball or go to little Johnny as an eight-year-old. He can say he loves the game. His parents sign him up to put him in a league. You know what that league has? Coaches. You know what those coaches have? They have a certain certification that they would know enough about basketball at every level to be able to get this kid maximize whatever his ability is. And I tell all my kids this. I don't care how good they are. That being Joey Boza, Larry Fitzgerald, Vince Carter, or all the other players that I've worked with. You have to submit your talent at the door to that coach and that organization. I know you think you know what's best, but you need to let them mold you into what you should do as an athlete. So when you get out of the essence of sports, I'm not going to listen to the coach. Well, go play golf. Go play tennis. Go do something on your own, because if you're going to be on a team, it's up to those coaches and managers to say, you know, what's best for me? My career would be totally different if Dennis Green hadn't called me up and said, you know something? You my little scoring forward. You can score. I'm going to put you in the slot. You got more space. It's basketball on AstroTurf. I'm getting ready to make you famous. And I was like, I ain't never played in the slot. I'd be the tallest slot receiver maybe in the history of the NFL. But I believed in Dennis Green. And I believe what my mom told me a long time ago. If you're going to play team sports, you're going to listen to the coach. If not, go play some tennis. And I'm in the project. She didn't really mean that. Or go play golf, which she knew I couldn't do. But my mom taught me that, Stu, at a very, very young age. And sports has not changed.
But you hit it on the head. And when you're on a team at a championship level, it's all about sacrifice. That's what makes the machine work.
And I know he has it in him. You know the reason why I have him? Because you mentioned USA Basketball. And when he shows up, there's something happens in his brain that's different than what we're seeing.
Yeah, and he was great in that role with USA Basketball, coming off the bench. He was a terrific scorer, but he has so many examples around him. I mean, look on his soon-to-be team. I mean, you look at a guy like Gordon, Eric Gordon. Right?
Wow.
Is there anybody that doesn't think that Eric Gordon's not a starter? Is there anybody that doesn't think that Andre Iguodala with the Golden State Warriors isn't a starter?
But I mean, do have great matchups with that second unit.
Exactly.
So I can see what you're
saying. When you're playing Carmelo Anthony against second unit players, oh, my goodness, I'll take my chances with Carmelo Anthony.
It's also one of the reasons we talk so much and so highly about Tom Brady, in that this year that he's entering, having played, he's still coachable. He still wants to learn. He's still okay to listen to whatever Belichick has
to say.
And
he's not comfortable with all of it either. It's
correct.
Not like they're doing everything Tom wants.
Right. So I think one of the things we talked about is that maybe getting waived might have humbled Carmelo Anthony a little bit. And I think we said, hey, you know what? Maybe this was the eye-opening moment where he's like, I need to reevaluate what my role is to what team, and it doesn't appear like that
happened.
And
he also talks about in this interview with Jermele Hill, and credit to her for getting to talk to him about this in long form. She did a really good job with it. That he was initially embarrassed. That he did talk to his wife and his family and saying, I mean, I'm not going to accept a buyout. Like, because he thought it was an embarrassing moment. And they talked and they said, hey, this is what happens in the league. Like, if a team doesn't want you and you don't want to be there, it's just like the new NBA. And he came to terms with it. But he didn't take, it would appear, from these comments, I'm not writing in stone, the next step that I assumed that if he chose the Rockets, he would be taking. Because he has another option in Miami. And if you just want to start, get buckets. Both states got no income taxes. Both teams got one of your best friends on it. And just see, you know what? I want to average 20 another year. Like, that's important to me. More power to you. But if he was choosing Houston, I have been under the impression it is understanding why Houston would be choosing him. And these comments are the first time that if I'm Daryl Morey, I'm like, are we better with him?
All right, Stu, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. We got to take a break. Coming up, will Odell Beckham get the long-term deal that he wants? All signs point to maybe. Next on First Things First. It's back here. First things first, former head coach Eric Mangini joins us now. Good morning. Happy Friday, sir.
Good to see you.
We are talking some Odell Beckham this morning. He showed up for work yesterday. So did coach, but we didn't make a big deal about it. You make a big deal about it when you're Odell and you're entering the final year of your rookie deal and you've let it be known that you want a new contract.
He did coach get some... got a new contract. That's why he showed up. He told
he's here.
Y'all didn't run out of business.
Yeah, y'all didn't know coach was holding out before.
Tap, tap. Let's see it.
Jokes. He did get some good news yesterday, Odell, that is. Giants owner John Mara said Beckham's contract will come sooner rather than later. All right, coach, would it be a good idea for the Giants to extend Odell before the season starts?
Well, I am really happy with whoever's advising Odell right now and the way that Odell has approached this, because I think it's absolutely the right way. When we were talking about this before, and there were, whether it was the off-the-field issues or was him threatening to not come to mini camp, not come to training camp, all those things, that's absolutely the wrong way to go about it, especially with a new GM and a new head coach. So he takes the radically different approach. He's there for everything. He shows that he's bought in. He shows that he's working. He shows that he's willing to commit to the new program. And I think that's why there's now openness by the organization to start doing this. Now, the issue is going to become, what is he looking for? What are they looking for? And you're hoping that this doesn't now become contentious when they start opening the negotiations and it's not where he wants it to be right away.
One thing coaches and organizations, and I've seen, they wonder when they draft a player what he's going to be like when we get him in our building, in our cities, knowing that the NFL life, the reality of it's a tough adjustment. A lot of the kids fail, how you're going to support them. But what I've seen is, on those second contracts, teams like to be able to predict based on what they've seen in those first 3 to 5 years. Man, because people think, well, if I get money, it's going to change it. No, money doesn't change you. It makes you a bigger what you already are. So as a coach, Coach Mangini is wondering, if I give this kid this money, who's he going to turn into? What Odell are we going to get? Are we going to get the Odell from the draft? Are we going to get sensational second season where people love him? Are we going to get him urinating as an end zone celebration, you know, as a dog? We're going to get him at the IG model in some foreign land in a hotel? Like, which one are we going to get? Now, what I tell people is what you see early, when you give them money, you'll see more of what you saw early. Now, I'm hoping that's not with Odell, but that is the dilemma that the Giants have with someone who has the things like Odell.
And Chris is absolutely right. Whatever, once you pay the player and you can't move on from the contract and you have no leverage as an organization, they're going to be whoever they are. And whoever you pay is what you believe in. So I may say that Chris is our leader. I may say that Nick is our leader. But whoever you pay in the locker room, everybody in the organization says, that's what you believe in. That's what you say is, that's what is acceptable to this organization. And that's the way that the group goes. So you want to be right, especially you have to be right on these second contracts. He's doing the right things now. Do I think it's a fundamental shift in who he is?
How do you answer that? As an organization, how do you be right? You say you have to be right. How do you know? We've seen Odell change.
You don't know.
It's a gamble.
It's a calculated risk.
This kid is not the same guy that we saw 4 or 5 years ago.
Hold on a second. It's a calculated risk.
That's true.
That is true. But what's also true is, I think with Odell, the money changing or revealing him is actually less of an issue, for good or for bad, because he's got the Nike money already. Like, he wasn't working just on that rookie contract. He got the biggest endorsement deal in NFL history for a non-quarterback, maybe even for a quarterback. It was $80 million, not all at once, but from Nike. So, now, maybe that led to more bad behavior, maybe whatever it was, but it's not a guy, I think, that was acting a certain way in reserve because I got to get my big money. Listen, whether they pay him or not, I think Odell, for good or for bad, is going to be about who we've seen. And in my eyes, the juice is worth the squeeze with him. He's such a great football player. He is such a game changer for your offense. And he's not a guy we're worried about getting arrested. He might have
you
some...
You don't know that, Nick.
Yeah,
Nick, you don't know that. You can't say that.
Okay.
You can't say that.
See, here's what I can say. Since he's been in the NFL, he has not been arrested. Since he's been in the NFL, his one league suspension was from an on-the-field act.
That's such a low bar. We could say this. He hasn't been arrested yet.
Do you follow the NFL offseason?
Have been a ton of guys who have, but the majority of NFL players have not been arrested. The majority of NFL players don't have off-field problems.
I don't think Odell's going to get arrested or anything, but I'm not even going to quantify that as a statement. Like, why should I be? Hey, man, we can sign this guy to an extension. You know why? He's not going to get arrested.
No,
that's not what I'm saying.
I agree with you.
What I'm saying is, what are you risking? Like, what are we actually talking about? A couple 15-yard penalties a year for end zone celebrations. Bake that into it.
I believe there's a few more things out there than you know.
Yeah, look, when you say that the juice is worth the squeeze, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, we don't really know what the squeeze is. We don't know how hard it is during the week to deal with this player. And you only find out publicly a fraction of the things that happen and how a guy really operates in the classroom, in the meeting rooms, on the practice field. So it's hard for us to say how much work is it to get him to Sunday.
Would we all agree that the person that knows the most about what Odell is the owner of the Giants? Would we agree?
No, I would not.
No, not even close.
Hold on. You're talking about
the
Odell.
You think the owners are at the meetings? You think the owners are at the insoles? You think the owners are at every practice? You think the owners are in the weight room?
The owners are puzzled by his behavior.
Owners are typically know the least because it's like everybody's Eddie Haskell when they come up to him so good to see him.
Of course. The point that I was trying to make is don't you think before an owner, before John Mara signs off, any of these guys sign off on this type of extension, whatever intel that the team has, that the league has on a player, the owner gets briefed on it. I would imagine that when you have good ownership, a good organization, they are not signing off on what you're talking about.
I'm certain the Giants know exactly what I know.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The Giants know.
They don't know more than I know.
Okay, that's fine, but they know what you know. That's my exact point. There aren't, and so if we heard a year ago the Giants ownership say, we want to give him an extension. We are now hearing again Giants ownership say, we are working on an extension. So knowing all these things, they believe the play on the field merits whatever the other
takes. At a certain number.
Right, of course. And that certain number, though, is we anticipate highest paid receiver. Not quarterback money, but highest paid receiver.
Or, Nick, they believe they wanted to pay him last year. They didn't. Now they're bringing it up again. Something happened. All the stuff that you say is not that big a deal because he wasn't arrested was enough to make them
hit the brakes just for a little. I didn't say it's not that big of a deal because he was not arrested.
Okay, you
compared it. What I said was, no. What I said was this, is that because Odell is one of the most famous athletes we have, I believe we overemphasize things like the red carpet, the celebrations, and in its totality.
I don't overemphasize it because I've been an NFL receiver. I've been exactly where he's trying to go. Everybody else might be blown out of proportion, but I know what it takes. I'm not guessing. I'm not getting someone's opinion. You know the reason why? I lived that life. So I got pretty good experience, all right? I know what Odell is going through, and we're trying to help him through that. Do I know what's going to happen? No. Do the Giants know what's going to happen? Heck no. Does the NFL know? No, they're praying, and they got their fingers crossed.
Right, I'm not trying to act like anyone can see the future, but I think what you said there, Chris, is the most important part. You've lived that life, and you hold someone who has communicated to you they want to be the greatest ever, has the talent to make that a possibility, to a standard. And it is a high standard because it's the standard he wants to hold himself to.
Just like Carmelo, man. Do what you say.
Right.
Don't say something and do something.
Yeah, don't tell me you love me. Show me you love me. And let your actions.
We love you, Coach.
That's true. Don't
say that consistently.
Coach, we love
Thank you.
You.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.